Well, a few public service announcements before we jump into our message this morning. First of all, happy birthday to Julie Davis. Julie, where are you at? You were here. Happy birthday. Secondly, be in prayer for a couple of things. First would be Rob and Cindy Zell as they are traveling to China to get their adopted child, and so they'll be back October 16th. I want to make you aware of that. Thirdly, wherever we're at with my extra announcements today, the news has been dominated by the hurricane that went through Haiti and then Florida and is still affecting the southeast. And so if you're looking for a good organization to contribute to when it comes to relief work down there, worldrelief.org is a good organization for you to contribute to. Hillcrest as a church, we'll be making a contribution to them as well. And then finally, Pastor Doug and his family are on vacation today and the following Sunday. They are out visiting family in California. Pastor Doug will be back in this spot on Sunday, October 23rd. All right, good? All right, good work. Well, today is week two in our Stand series. And I'm wondering, have you ever wondered what certain dreams mean? Researchers tell us that we have a few occurring or reoccurring dreams, and they've done some research to figure out what these various common dreams mean. How many of you have had the dream of falling? Okay, that's a fairly common one. This is viewed as a red flag from your subconscious. It means you're either dealing with or you're subconsciously dealing with major life problems, either at work or within your relationships. How many of you get the test-taking dream or the unprepared for the test-taking dream? Okay, if you're experiencing this, researchers say you're most likely a perfectionist, and the dream is serving as a reminder to stay alert. It can also indicate stress at work or school. Basically, the researchers say if you're having a dream, it indicates stress. So, I mean, I could have summed this up, but, what fun is that? How about the dream of being chased? Ever had that one? Researchers say that women are more likely than men to have this dream. It's a sign that the dreamer is supposed to face a problem that's been hanging over her head, and she's supposed to, get after it, tackle it. Okay. But the dream of being late. Not sure we need the researchers for this one. The dream of being late means that you are overwhelmed and doing too much. Wow, thank you. That would be $150, right, for that interpretation. How about when your spouse has a bad dream about you? Am I the only guy that's happened to? Right? I'll wake up and Trina will wake up and she'll say, "I hate you." And I'll say, "Well, good morning. Good morning to you, too. Yeah, you were such a jerk in my dream last night, blah, blah, blah," and we'd kind of go on. And my take is this: I do enough in real life to be upset about. That we don't need the subconscious getting me into trouble either. But I didn't pick a picture for that one, so. No, you don't. No, you don't, because you don't pay me when you talk about me. So. I have the mic, and I get the last say. This has already been fun, right? Jacob, come on up. We'll just close it up, sing a song, send the people home happy. Well, we are looking at Daniel in our Old Testament series on standing or stand today. And today we're going to look at King Nebuchadnezzar. And he's struggling with a dream that has frightened him. Turn in Daniel to chapter 4. We're going to start in verses 4 through 7. We'll be all throughout chapter 4. We have Bibles in the seats in front of you. We'll also have the words on the screen here as well. Tentatively, we've got a new TV coming this week. And they're putting it in on Tuesday, so expect to see this until about Thanksgiving. That's how stuff works around here. All right? Daniel 4, 4 through 7. "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was living in my palace in comfort and prosperity. But one night I had a dream that frightened me. I saw visions that terrified me as I lay in my bed. So I issued an order calling in all the wise men of Babylon, so they could tell me what my dream meant. When all the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and fortune tellers came in, I told them the dream, but they could not tell me what it meant. And Pastor Doug introduced us to the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar last week. He ruled over Babylon from 605 to about 562 BC. He was the most powerful and longest reigning of the Babylonian kings and brought Babylon to the summit of influence throughout the known world at that time. King Nebuchadnezzar most likely built the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, one of the seven ancient wonders of the world, also responsible for capturing Palestine in 605 BC. If you've taken any world history or civilizations course in high school or college, it's not a good one if it didn't mention the Babylonian reign and Nebuchadnezzar. This is the birthplace of civilization. And King Nebuchadnezzar is at the top of his game. He's the most powerful person in the world, and that is not a dramatic overstatement. Everything is going right for the king, and then he has this dream that is keeping him up at night. And not one of his magicians or astrologers or professional dream interpreters can tell him what is going on. And so what is this super difficult dream that is keeping the king awake at night? Verse 10 and following. King Nebuchadnezzar says, "While I was lying in my bed, this is what I dreamed. I saw a large tree in the middle of the earth. The tree grew very tall and strong, reaching high into the heavens for all the world to see. It had fresh green leaves, and it was loaded with fruit for all to eat. Wild animals lived in its shade, and birds nested in its branches. All the world was fed from this tree. Then as I lay there dreaming, I saw a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven. The messenger shouted, 'Cut down the tree and lop off its branches. Shake off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Chase the wild animals from its shade and the birds from its branches. But leave the stump and the roots in the ground, bound with a band of iron and bronze and surrounded by tender grass. Now let him be drenched with the dew of heaven and let him live with the wild animals among the plants of the field.'" So this is the dream that the professionals were having a difficult time interpreting. Maybe like me, you can sometimes find the Bible to be difficult and challenging, hard to understand. But this dream seems fairly straightforward, does it not? The king, the most powerful person in the world at the time, is having a dream where there is a large tree in the middle of the earth. The tree is very tall and strong. All the animals gather around the tree. Everyone eats from the tree. The birds find their nests in the tree. And then a messenger, someone from heaven, comes down and chops down the tree, causing the fruit to scatter and the animals and birds to flee. This seems like dream interpreting 101. This seems like the being chased kind of dream. I wonder what that's about. And so when the king tells his professional dream interpreters to interpret the dream, they're like, "Oh, that's a good one, king. Not sure what's going on with that dream." You see, some versions of the scriptures say, you know, the interpreters could not interpret the dream. And some versions more correctly say they would not interpret the dream because they know what it means. And they're simply too scared to tell the king the interpretation of the dream. And today's message is a little difficult to deliver because we're talking about standing up. We're talking about moments in life where we have to stand up and deliver unwelcome or uncomfortable news. We're talking about things like conflict and confrontation. It's a difficult message because some of us have the potential maybe to hear this message the wrong way. You see, some of us are overly confrontational. And we don't need much prompting or, much inspiration to go out and confront someone. Some of us are people or we know people who can't wait to get in a fight. And can't wait to click, click, click on the computer and fire off something on social media. Can't wait to just say bleh, bleh to somebody about what we think about them. We call these drive-by confrontations because you don't have a relationship with the person that you're confronting. There's no context for what you're saying. You're just going to spew your opinions verbally or written and let the person deal with the fallout from what you're saying. Others of us are on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So if some of us really love confrontation, others of us, we would rather be up here maybe than confront somebody. But we're scared of it. We don't want to deal with it. We would much rather do a lot of other things than risk confronting someone. We say things like, it's none of my business. I'm just going to live and let live, or who am I to judge? And those are good thoughts to have, but if they prevent you from ever confronting someone, that's not a solid way to live either. So we really need God's wisdom here in how we are to confront in the right way, at the right time, and for the right reasons. Because there are going to be times when you and I do need to confront someone. And those of us that are parents, and we see our children making poor decisions, we're going to have to step in and say, hey, this way of life you're living is not good. It's going to lead to this or to this or to this, and so we need you to move to the different way to live life. You might have a family member or a close friend who's making poor financial decisions. And you know that those decisions down the road are going to devastate them. And God might call you to lean into that situation and say something so that family member or friend doesn't experience heartache down the road. You might have a relative or family member who's very judgmental. I mean, doesn't every family have one of those, right? And you might be thinking, well, ours doesn't. Then it might be you. I don't know. It seems like most of us have at least one or two of those folks. Every holiday, every time you get together, they're making, you know, racial comments or comments that you just go, oh, I can't believe, you know, Uncle so-and-so said that. God might be calling you to say, look, in our family, we're not going to do this. We're not going to talk about people that way. We're not going to treat people that way. So that's what we want to look at today. How do we stand up to people in situations in our lives? How do we stand up without being that drive-by confronter, but also not the person who never says anything? So back to the king and Daniel. The professionals could not or would not interpret that dream. Too afraid, Daniel is summoned. Verse 19, upon hearing this, Daniel, also known as Belteshazzar, was overcome for a time, frightened by the meaning of the dream. Then the king said to him, Belteshazzar, do not be alarmed by the dream and what it means. Belteshazzar replied, I wish the events foreshadowed in this dream would happen to your enemies, my lord, and not to you. I wish the events foreshadowed in this dream would happen to your enemies, my lord, and not to you. And Daniel's going to show us, he's going to kind of walk us step by step on how to lovingly confront. The first way he does this is he praises the king, and he communicates his care for the king and his concern for the king. Daniel could have just spewed the interpretation of the dream. But he says, I wish the events foreshadowed in this dream would happen to your enemies. I don't want this to happen to you, king. I don't want what God is telling me is going to happen to you. Next, Daniel confronts, verse 24 through 26. This is what the dream means, your majesty, and what the Most High has declared will happen to my lord the king. You will be driven from human society, and you will live in the fields with the wild animals. You will eat grass like a cow, and you'll be drenched with the dew of heaven. 7 periods of time will pass while you live this way, until you learn that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world and gives them to anyone he chooses. Side note, that's really good advice for this election season. The Most High rules. The Most High is in charge. And the Most High is in control. So let's remember that in the weeks and months to come. Verse 26, but the stump and the roots of the tree were left in the ground. This means that you will receive your kingdom back again when you have learned that heaven rules. And so Daniel tells the king the truth. So he communicates his care for the king. Secondly, he simply tells the king the truth. He does what the other interpreters were unwilling to do and says, this is what the dream means. But Daniel's not done. He could have stopped there. He could have said, look, king, I care about you. This is what the dream means. Have a nice day. But he goes one step further and stands up to the king. Not because he's arrogant, not because he thinks he's better than the king, not because he wants to correct the king, but because he cares about the king and wants the king to know God's goodness. Look at verse 27. Daniel says, "King Nebuchadnezzar, please accept my advice. Stop sinning and do what is right. Break from your wicked past and be merciful to the poor. Perhaps then you will continue to prosper." King, I care about you. This is what you're doing. Knock it off. Pretty simple formula for any time we're going to help bring loving correction to someone. I love you. Stop spending your money so foolishly. Do what is right. Or I love you. Stop being so harsh and do what is right. Or I love you. Stop disrespecting me. Treat me the way I ought to be treated. Whatever the confrontation fill in the blank is, fairly good formula to follow. I want to take a quick look at the New Testament and get Paul's take on this as well. Galatians 6:1, real quick. "Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path. And be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself." Another great way of what confrontation, biblical confrontation, looks like. Gentleness and humility kind of encompassing the whole process with the goal of helping get the person back onto the right path. And so if you're taking notes today in your soul provider or on a piece of paper or mentally in your head, here's a good fill-in. God, help us confront with the goal of restoration. The goal of confrontation is to help the person get back on the right path. We never confront because we think we're right. We never confront because, you know, we think we're better than someone. We only confront because we feel God telling us or leading us to confront. And we want that person to be right with God. And as Paul says in Galatians 6, and as Daniel modeled for us, our approach matters when it comes to conflict and confrontation. I'll give you two stories from my own life about how this plays out, one on the drive-by side and one on the better biblical side. I started working here at Hillcrest way back in fall of 2002. A lot younger back then. Had a lot more energy back then. Things were going well. I started out here as the youth pastor. I was working about 30 hours a week. That was closer to 40, but I only work one day a week, so we just kind of compressed it into that one day. Also, finishing up seminary, and Tarina was pregnant with Riley. Riley's not here. I owe him no money. So, okay. I'm not sure that even counts, but it's just a parenthetical note, okay? That's what was going on. And Riley would be born in April of 2003, and so it's no understatement to say that life was a blur. Being the youth pastor here, I took over for Pastor Doug, who had built this incredible and exciting and godly and very large youth ministry. And I was a middle school intern in another church in town, and I was in charge of about 10 to 12 middle school students, and then was hired here and was in charge of exponentially more. And I'd always considered myself good at organization and administration, but stepping into that role really challenged me. There were more students, more families, more programs, more events, more traditions, more demands. And I was honestly drowning a bit in all the communication organization needed to continue this ministry that I had inherited. And I can remember vividly two conversations about that, about my organization or lack thereof. And one was the drive-by approach. One was the more humble and gentle approach. The drive-by, you can always remember the drive-bys, right? Like they happened yesterday. And so it was over here. See, you got a place. It was at the Holiday. It's a gas stop, or it was a gas stop back then, but it was at the Holiday gas station. Got a call from a parent. This parent has not attended here in several years, so rest assured, I'm not talking about any of you, okay? Anyway, got a call from a parent. And we're talking about some upcoming thing. You know, this parent had a question about this, a question about that. And then we're kind of wrapping up the conversation. The parent kind of snidely slips this in. Well, you and I both know that organization is not your strength. Yeah, thanks for that. You know, exactly. It's like, oh. You know it at the time. You know that it's not going so well. And this person's like, I'm just going to kind of stick you a little bit while I've got you. While I've got you on the phone. You know, there was no even, there wasn't even like a just saying or a ha-ha-ha, you know, kind of break the tension. It was, you know, just slipped right in there. And the truth is, if I was more mature at that point or further along in my spiritual journey, I might have been able to accept that feedback, right? Because even though I didn't really care for the person it came from, even though I didn't like what that person had to say, there was some truth there. But I wasn't mature enough at that point to actually hear that from that person. I didn't like the approach. I didn't like the context. I didn't have enough of a relationship to hear what that person was saying. The Galatians 6:1 conversation was also like yesterday. It was my first scheduled performance review with Pastor Doug. And he knew I was treading water. He knew I was a bit over my head, transitioning into that role. And he knew what skills and abilities I would need to continue to have in order to grow that ministry that he had handed to me. And so he did what most good leaders do. He did what he talked about, what he talked about last week in his own message. He complimented me, said some nice things, and said, look, you're going to have to step it up organizationally if you want to continue this ministry. He said, you've got what it takes, but you can improve. You can get better. And I was able to hear that because I have context, and I have a relationship, and I knew that he wanted the best for myself and for that ministry. And so that was feedback or confrontation done well. The relationship and the approach make all the difference in how we receive feedback. Drive-by confrontations, angry people on social media, people that we have minimal to no relationship with, it's just ineffective. It's in the context of a relationship that we're trying to bring restoration. And so when we confront, help us confront with the goal of restoration. Second note is this: God, help us to confront with caution. Help me, help you, help us to confront with caution. The truth with confronting is that when we confront other people, we're opening ourselves up to pride. Because if you confront someone, no matter how humbly, no matter how cautiously you approach that person, when you confront someone, you're indirectly saying, look, I'm better than you, or I'm more spiritual than you. Even if you're not saying that, chances are the person you're confronting is going to hear it like that. Look, you're struggling with this. I'm not struggling with this, so I'm going to speak into your life about this. And so you have to be very gentle, very careful, very cautious. Because even if you don't mean to, or if that's the farthest thing from the truth, it's more likely the person being confronted is going to hear it like that. It's one of the main reasons why I personally don't like it, don't like confrontation. Because if I'm going to kind of lean in and confront you, I know you could come back right at me, right? And say, well, since we're talking honestly, got a few things about your life I'd like to point out. Boom, boom, boom. Right now, I don't want that. So that's why you've got to be kind of ginger with this thing. That's why it's humbly and gently. If I ever lovingly bring correction to you, I hope you know that I'm not higher than you or better than you or have it all figured out more than you. If you ever lovingly bring correction to me, I hope you communicate that you're not better than me or that you have it all figured out more than I do. Because you and I were all lower than God, correct? It's why it's a difficult message to give, because the homework isn't to, you know, go out and confront three people before next Sunday. Yeah, we don't need you to leave here this morning going, oh man, I got a license to confront. I'm going to go after you know, kind of make your list and check it off. The last thing we need is a church full of people who are against one another. You know, Christians as a whole, all of us, especially in America, we already struggle with that. We already struggle with being known for what we're against and who we're against, than being known what we're for and who we're for. We already have that perception throughout the rest of our nation. And so we ought to desire to be known for and who we're for. That we're for the kingdom of God, that we're for other people, and that we want to see others become closer to God. The worship team is going to make their way up here to close our service. I know the confrontation done the right way can be risky. It can be messy. It can be ugly to stand up. It can be messy to stand up. In your marriage, you might need to say, you know what, I've been a doormat for a long time. I've felt disrespected for a long time. And I love you too much to let this continue. Let's go get help. Your supervisor, your manager at work might be above you. They might not be respecting your opinion. If you've got something significant to offer or significant to say, or you have this idea that you think could really help the company or your business, you might need to say, hey, give this a chance. Give it a listen. I think I've got something to offer here. Risk that uncomfortable moment to get your point across. Your child might be going the wrong way. You might need to say, listen, I love you so much. I've made similar mistakes as you're making or about to make. Please listen. Please hear me on this. And when the Holy Spirit connects in our hearts and works through us in God's perfect timing and in God's perfect way, we believe that we're going to gently and humbly help people get back on the right path. Join me in prayer. Father, we thank you for the witness of Daniel. We thank you for his story of standing up to the most powerful man in the world to tell him the truth and to communicate your truth. And some of us here, Father, have relationships and situations in our life that you are calling us to lean into and speak truth into. Give us the courage to stand up. Give us the courage to do it in a way that is humble and gentle. Father, some of us need to be confronted. Prepare our hearts for those confrontations as well. I thank you so much for this church, for the community that's gathered here this morning, for the work that you have done in each of our lives, that you've done in us as a body. May we continue to worship you and praise you today. We pray these things in your name.